This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Wahib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
No, I mean, they're getting, basically we do what we can with what we have where we are, but it's far from adequate.
That's Yasmin Sharif, Executive Director of the Education Cannot Wait Fund, on whether the children in Chad's refugee camps are getting the support they need. Details coming up. Also, the African Climate Summit ends with a call for a global carbon tax on fossil fuels, aviation, and maritime transport. And the U.S. is giving nearly $163 million in extra aid for Sudan and neighboring countries. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. The first African Climate Summit has ended today with a call for world leaders to rally behind a global carbon tax on fossil fuels, aviation, and maritime transport. It also seeks reform of the world financial system that forces African nations to pay more, to borrow money, and fall deeper into debt. The Associated Press says the unanimous declaration is backed by the leaders of the continent of 1.3 billion people, a population set to double by 2050. It calls on the world's biggest emitters of greenhouse gases and its richest countries to keep their promises, especially the unfulfilled pledge of $100 billion annually in climate finance to developing nations. The declaration also calls for Africa's vast mineral wealth to be processed on the continent. On the final day of the first Africa Climate Summit, leaders from across the continent rallied support for quick action to ease climate change and its impact. The three-day summit in Nairobi under the theme Driving Green Growth and Climate Finance Solutions for Africa and the World concluded today with a Nairobi Declaration on Climate Change and Call to Action. Reporter Ruben Chama spoke with Brian Onyango, the founder of USAFI Green Energy, which manufactures and supplies affordable, low-carbon cook stoves in Kenya's Kakuma refugee camp, creating work and improving health for displaced people and host communities. The company is among the finalists for the 2023 Ashton Awards, pioneers delivering low-carbon solutions in their communities.
We provide clean energy solution. In particular, we manufacture clean cookstoves and clean fuel called the briquettes. Our aim is to target the refugees in Kakuma and the marginalized community in Turkana, whereby we provide them the alternative clean energy solution, mostly the cooking solution.
Why is it important to involve these marginalized communities in tackling issues of climate change and coming up with these innovative solutions?
Basically, as we know, Turkana is one of the poorest counties in Kenya. I personally, I was raised in Nairobi, but following my interventions and movement in Turkana, I saw there was a huge gap and I need to address the lack of clean cooking in that solution. So our aim is to try to empower this marginalized community, provide something alternative so that they can also have a resounding voice when it comes to adopting to clean or climate environmental products.
What are some of your key takeaways in this conference? What are some of the solutions coming out of this conference?
Our key takeaway is that we are more proud to see our president is spearheading the conversation on clean energy, and we aim to leverage on this. Last year at COP, we were talking about a lot of loss of damage and decarbonization, mostly being affected by the global south. And our aim is to have a one resounding voice whereby we can advocate more of climate change, because Global South normally get more heat, and our plan is to engage stakeholders, work with private sector, work with the governments, so as to try to leverage and introduce what is alternative solution do we have in regards to the climate change, whereby in Kenya already the president have gotten some intervention whereby we plant trees. We go green when it comes to windmills and even hydropower generation. So that's the way to go.
You are among the finalists of this year's Ashden Award. What does that kind of international recognition mean to you?
Being a finalist of this year's award is a resounding win for us, especially we applied this application twice, and this was our third attempt, because we really feel that our story also deserves to be acknowledged and recognized, because you are in the deepest marginalized community, tackling both refugees and host community. And being named as the finalist, we feel that is a win to the Kakuma people and to the Kakuma family. And we look forward to share our story with all partners who might want to work with us, engage us, or even partner with us.
That was Brian Onyango, the founder of USAFI Green Energy, which manufactures and supplies affordable low-carbon cook stoves in Kenya's Kakuma refugee camp. He was speaking with VOA's Ruben Chama from Nairobi. In Nigeria, a court panel today has been releasing its findings in the court case challenging the election of President Bola Tinubu in February. The hearing has been going on for several hours as the judges read out their extensive findings. Thus far, the court has dismissed many of the challenges regarding Tinubu, which the People's Democratic Party and the Labour Party has filed. Among their findings, the judges dismissed the Labour Party candidate Peter Obi's allegation that the election was rigged in Tinubu's favour. The Abuja court has been deliberating since June over dozens of allegations of irregularities in the election of the president and several state governors or senators. The court building is surrounded by heavy security. A reporter at the court tells VOA there is no significant crowd outside, as police are limiting access to only accredited journalists and people approved to be in the area. A small group of women nearby hold signs supporting Tinubu, who leads the All Progressive Congress. We'll be updating the story on voaafrica.com and all your favorite VOA news programs. Gabon civilians are celebrating the military junta's liberation Tuesdays of several political prisoners jailed for years without trial by ousted President Ali Bongo Ondimba. Coup leader Brice Nguema also received his first foreign delegation, led by Central African Republic President Faustin Archange Touadéra. Central African leaders sent the delegation to negotiate a return to civilian rule after suspending Gabon from their regional bloc. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from neighboring Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Gabon's military junta says it has freed several people held without trial by the government of ousted President Ali Bongo. Included in the release was Jean Remy Yama, leader of the Coalition of Gabon State Workers Trade Unions, who was detained in February 2022. Yama was accused of embezzlement and abuse of confidence, a charge trade union leaders in Gabon describe as unfounded. Gabon's trade unions say Yama was a vocal critic of Bongo's refusal to improve conditions of state workers in the oil-producing nation. Renaud Alogo Akwe, former Director General of Gabon's National Social Insurance and Health Fund, who was arrested in December 2019 and given a 10-year jail sentence for misappropriating public funds, was released, as was Landre Nzue, former mayor of Gabon's capital, Libreville. 62-year-old Nzue, who is a former Politburo member of Bongo's Gabon's Democratic Party, told Gabon's national television Tuesday the military junta has saved him from the mental and psychological torture he was going through at the Libreville Central Prison.
3 years derrière les barreaux.
He says he is very thankful to Gabon's military and junta leader Brice Oligui Nguema for ordering his release from the central prison in Libreville, where he was incarcerated for 3 years illegally without trial. He says he is ready to work with Nguema for a return to democracy, normal life, and the development of Gabon. Gabon State TV showed images of scores of people, including opposition supporters, celebrating the liberation of the prisoners. Nzue has always claimed he wanted Bongo to serve Gabon, accusing him instead of serving his family, Bongo accused Nzue of stealing public funds. During his swearing-in as interim president on Monday, coup leader Brice Oligui Nguema promised amnesty for people he described as prisoners of conscience. He did not give the number of such prisoners, but Gabon's opposition says there are many. Nguema also promised to facilitate the return of all Gabon citizens exiled abroad. Arcel Morongui is a researcher and political analyst at Omar Bongo University in Gabon's capital, Libreville. He spoke via a messaging app from Libreville. He says the liberation of three prisoners is a promise made by Nguema, and civilians expect the military leader to liberate many other political prisoners who are languishing in detention centers. He says Nguema, who has made Gabon to regain its freedom, should now consider the return of exiles as the military leader promised during his swearing-in on Monday. On Tuesday, Central African Republic President Faustin Archange Touadéra was the first foreign president to visit Gabon after last week's coup. Touadéra, who was appointed by the 12-member Economic Community of Central African States, ECAS, to mediate Gabon's transition to constitutional order, held closed-door talks with the junta leader in Libreville. No statements were made after the meeting. ECAS on Monday suspended Gabon from the regional bloc and promised further sanctions should Gabon fail to hand over to civilian rule. Nguema, during his swearing-in on Monday, said he was committed to handing over power to civilians by organizing free, transparent, and credible elections, but he did not say when. The military junta has also announced an imminent appointment of a transitional government of what it calls experienced and seasoned people. ECAS says Touadéra will meet Bongo to be updated on his state of health and the well-being of the ousted president's family. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
While diplomats try to quickly restore democratically elected governments in Africa that have been ousted in a recent rash of coups, major questions loom on the continent. Why are military takeovers in Francophone countries becoming common? And why is Russia's Wagner mercenary group ready to support the new military juntas? Professor John Mbaku is a non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institution in Washington, D.C. I spoke with him recently, and he said in countries like former French colonies Niger and Gabon, there is a great sense of frustration and people are looking to the military to resolve critical and difficult governance problems. But he doubts that the military weighs the solution.
But what we have to keep in mind is that the military's overconfidence and perhaps a certain level of arrogance that they and they alone have the right answers to these serious problems is misplaced. The military doesn't have the answer to these problems. It has the gun. The military has the gun and is able to seize control of government.
Mbaku says military leaders often speak with certainty that they can rescue their countries from foreign exploitation, extreme poverty, corruption, nepotism, and rampant violence that exist in these countries. But throughout the past seven decades, he says, the military has shown failure in governance in several African nations.
The military has not been able to supply any better solutions than the ones that were supplied by the civilian regimes. And so I think that it is not appropriate for us to continue to look up to the military. The key for developing African countries lies in a trust in the people, a trust in the development of institutions that are undergirded by the rule of law.
According to Mbaku, those institutions do not have to be the same as the ones in Western nations. Nevertheless, he says, there should have some level of the rule of law. He says the people of Francophone Africa now see the Russians, including the mercenary Wagner group, as a better alternative than the French. He points out that there is no guarantee that the Russians wouldn't come in and do the same thing the French have been accused of doing, such as exploiting resources and ignoring civilian concerns.
Because the Russians are in Africa doing the looking for minerals, looking for resources, looking for gold, looking for an opportunity to enrich themselves, just as much as the Western powers have done during the last several years. So I think that development in Africa must be based on African solutions for African problems.
The British government today designated Wagner as an international terrorist organization, while the United States has designated it a transnational organized crime group. In our conversation, Professor Mbaku suggested that instead of military leadership, African countries should look to ECOWAS and other regional organizations to provide structure. He also says they should improve their governance institutions and economies through regional cooperation and trade with neighboring countries. You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. At a refugee encampment in eastern Chad, many Sudanese children say Janjaweed militias in Darfur have made them orphans in recent months. As media and rights organizations continue to report atrocities, reporter Henry Wilkins speaks to the children who are left to fend for themselves in a foreign country with little help.
In the refugee camps of eastern Chad, children make kites from debris they find on the ground. Sticks make a frame, plastic bags for the sail. A refugee said they look like the planes that drop bombs over Darfur, the area of Sudan that the children have fled. Childhood and the fallout of war sit shoulder to shoulder in the refugee camp in Adre. 12-year-old Insaf Jomar Mohammed says the militias, the Rapid Support Forces linked paramilitary group that the refugees called Janjaweed, brought unimaginable horror to her and her younger siblings. She says the Janjaweed killed her parents. They shot them. She and her siblings were sitting in the house with their mother and father, and they killed both of them. She says she watched it happen. The Janjaweed said nothing as they killed them.
The Janjaweed killed my parents by shooting them. We were sitting in our house with my father. My mother was in the house too, and they killed both of them. I saw it happen. The Janjaweed didn't say a word. They just killed them.
Mohammed managed to escape Darfur with her aunt and now tries to help take care of her younger siblings, despite her having a disability. The Human Rights Watch organisation describes the paramilitary group's abuses of civilians in Darfur as horrific. In Adre, those orphaned by the violence are not difficult to find. Fatma Ahmed Habib says her brother and father went missing in Darfur, but she escaped to Adre with her mother and remaining family. She says her mother passed away in the hospital shortly after she arrived in Adre. She says life is incredibly challenging because they have no possessions. The Janjaweed stole everything from them.
My mother passed away in the hospital shortly after we brought her here. Life has become incredibly challenging for us, especially given that we are left with nothing as they took all our belongings.
Now she must take care of her younger siblings with no parents left to rely on. Yasmin Sharif is Executive Director of Education Cannot Wait, a UN fund for children in humanitarian crises. VOA asked her whether the children in Chad's refugee camps are getting the support they need from the international community.
No. I mean, they are getting... Basically, we do what we can with what we have where we are, but it's far from adequate.
The effect of losing both parents is especially acute.
To be separated from your caregiver at a young age normally creates a very strong separation trauma or sense of abandonment. It's very unhealthy for a child.
Mohammed's experience reflects this. She says she misses her parents and thinks about them all the time.
I miss my parents and I think about them all the time.
The group Global Esham Relief says the trauma and complexity of refugees' orphan situations can lead to chronic stress with lifelong impacts on health. Henry Wilkins, VOA News, Adre, Chad.
an election monitor's report from the Southern African Development Community that said Zimbabwe's recent polls were riddled with irregularities drew international praise. The harsh criticism from the regional organization, which has often been accused of ignoring electoral abuses in Zimbabwe, raised hopes of pressure being put on President Emmerson Mnangagwa and his ZANU-PF administration to reform. But analysts say South Africa's endorsement of Mnangagwa has tamped down optimism. Darren Taylor reports.
South Africa is the most powerful member of the Southern African Development Community, SADC. At the same time, its governing African National Congress, the ANC, is close to Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF. The two parties say they're brothers and sisters in arms because they both fought liberation struggles against racist white governments. The South African government has ignored human rights and electoral abuses across the Limpopo River, even as economic meltdown has sent millions of Zimbabweans streaming into South Africa for more than two decades. And although SADC election monitors said Zimbabwe's polls last month were plagued with problems and irregularities, South Africa has said nothing. Some Zimbabweans hoped President Cyril Ramaphosa would support the SADC mission's conclusions. Instead, say analysts, he undermined them by congratulating Mnangagwa after he was declared the winner. Ramaphosa also attended the ZANU-PF leader's inauguration on Monday, one of only three heads of state to do so.
President Ramaphosa should not have done this. Desmond Tutu once said, if an elephant has its foot on the tail of a mouse, and you say that you're neutral, the mouse is not going to appreciate your neutrality.
Itumeleng Makhetla is an international relations analyst in Johannesburg. He says Ramaphosa's support for Mnangagwa may trouble many Zimbabweans.
And I'm sure that they don't appreciate seeing one of the most important people in Africa, the president of South Africa, the second largest economy on the continent, smiling, waving, congratulating Emmerson Mnangagwa and the ZANU-PF for a very problematic election result. The ZANU-PF government has committed atrocities and continues to commit atrocities and abuse human rights in Zimbabwe. It doesn't make sense for somebody who is a democrat, somebody who values liberal ideals, to go and consort with somebody who is diametrically opposed to those values.
A political analyst at Wits University, Dr. William Mpofu, points out the United States, European Union, the Commonwealth and the United Nations supported their SADC report. If South Africa had added its voice to these, he says, powerful pressure could have been brought to bear on Mnangagwa to institute political reforms. Instead, says Mpofu, the Ramaphosa administration has strengthened ZANU-PF's autocratic grip on Zimbabwe.
It's a retreat for democracy in Africa, a retreat for progress in Africa, and it's unfortunate that President Ramaphosa, leading such an exemplary democracy as South Africa, will lend South Africa's weight and South Africa's image to such a sham election.
The South African President's office did not respond to several requests for comment. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Adrius Regas, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.